Okay, now, okay, how do I get to my 12 then? All right. Oh, good. Oh, how do I get back? Okay. And how to drink wine. That's what I'm saying. This is a great pleasure to have everyone here. The first thing I want to do is to actually thank my collaborators. This is basically represents a body of work. What's the word when you are, the cat's got my tongue. But anyway, what's that word? You know, there's a word when something progresses in time.
Evolution
of, yeah. Chronological, that's what I meant, but I guess it's the same thing, yeah. My colleagues, Michael Peskin, Muhammad Sheikh Jabari, and in the second part of the talk, Nico Yunez, who will be going up to Princeton as a postdoc, we're very proud of him, to talk a lot of physics with Paul, and Robert Brandenburger, Keshav Dasgupta, Rina Nguyen, who's Keshav's student. Third part of the talk, my student, Joseph Ochoa. And I also want to thank my colleagues here, and especially Radu Roiban for, keeping me honest with the string theory part of the second. Well, we'll see if I get away with it. So, let's begin. This is sort of like, the spiel I give. Cosmology, we know, has been matured into precision science. Oh, do I get a point or something like that? Oh, awesome. So, has matured into precision science with a wealth of data. And we heard a lot about that. And these are a few examples of the wealth of data that we are confronted with and will be confronted with. We know that the interplay between cosmology and particle physics, have had a long history, holds a promise to address some unresolved problems, observational problems. So today I want to focus on three of these mysteries. So the first is something that some of us are very, very intimate with, like Professor Trodden out here. He has a very nice review on baryogenesis. The way I like to say this is why in the largest observed distances we don't see anti-galaxies. Okay. We definitely see antimatter, but to the degree of, regularity and coherency and making sense, we don't see antimatter. We definitely don't see negative entropy antimatter, like we are. The other problem I'm going to talk about today, and we will find that it's actually connected to this, is the issue of primordial magnetic fields. And that's a statement that, or the observation that I should actually use the word most. Spiral galaxies have a magnetic dynamo that plays a very important role. Well, some people argue, Peter knows this much better than I do, plays some role in star formation and cosmic ray physics. And then I want to talk about inflation at the very end. Now, you might wonder, why am I focusing on these three problems of amongst other things. The reason why I got bored and I wanted to work on something new. But the real truth was that it started really with this story. So we're going to start here. So there's actually a thread that ties all these three problems together and the model that I'm going to propose. Okay? And here's the insight. The insight is that there is an anomaly. The same way you have anomalies and anomaly cancellations, say, in our standard model, there are anomalies that, in this context, all right, that arise from string theory. Now, notice I use the word model independent. I must be very careful when I use this word model independent, because it's not really model independent. But for a wide class of string theories, these anomalies that I'm going to talk about, there's two of them, will actually, in the low energy limit, four dimensions, contribute in a very interesting way. That actually plays the role in both source and magnetic fields and also the matter asymmetry at different epochs. In some ways, this statement here is actually more general. I'm just using string theory as a theoretical testbed, basically, to show that these terms are quite generic, but actually how these anomalies could arise is more general than that. Okay, so that's the theme. The theme is that give me these anomalies, and I'm going to show you now how to simultaneously produce a matter asymmetry, all three of the Sakharov conditions in one shot, and also how to generate a coherent magnetic field. Now, this is not enough to just have these anomaly terms present, say, as corrections to the standard model and general relativity. The important thing here is that these anomalies work together with inflation, with the amplification that inflation does, okay, to take this otherwise small effect that you would just consider to be insignificant and amplify it. And that, we will be looking at some equations, and you'll actually see how that all works out nicely. And the point is that the inflation will work together to actually amplify the matter asymmetry, but then after inflation ends, this anomaly term will turn around and actually, in another interesting way, generate a magnetic, coherent magnetic field. So you might wonder how all that happens. It's a lofty idea, and, you know, I've been guilty of coming up with lofty ideas in the past. But, you know, the name of the game here was to actually come up also with intriguing ways to actually, I would say quasi-predictions, because for future experiments, okay, that would actually test such effects. And so the end of my talk, I'll talk about a new PPM parameter that has not been measured yet, and the possibility of circular polarization in the CMB that has not been looked for. Well, basically, the game was to convince my friends that, who are actually building Polar Bear to calibrate the detector to look for V. And so this is a counter argument, but we'll talk more about it in a second. So let's focus now on the baryon asymmetry problem. So WMAP and BBN measure the baryon to entropy index, meaning the abundance of the baryon number density to, let's say, the number density of photons to be this number. Now, so this is just a statement that this number looks small, but it's large enough to cause a problem in our minimal standard model. So we, in cosmology, we can ask this question, well, not only why is there a matter asymmetry, but why this number itself? Okay, so the point here is that our minimal standard model makes the wrong prediction, and the question is, what's missing? And this, we know this, it's always nice to show these nice little pictures that other people drew. So in 67, I believe in a home prison, Andrei Sakharov realized the three necessary conditions for baryogenesis. All three of these things have to be happening at the same time. The first, you need some process, let's say, in the Saturn model that violates the baryon number production. The second thing is that the baryon number production has to violate CP. If you're talking about leptogenesis, it's enough that it's just, you can just have C, for example, CP. So, and this process, while it's happening, has to happen out of equilibrium with the expansion rate of the universe. Okay. So, where do we differ? Okay. First of all, you have the particle physics stuff going on, okay, to, you know, the CP violation and the baryon number asymmetry. And then you have the space-time stuff going on, which is your background cosmology. What we sought after was something that tied in a more natural way, the space-time dynamics with the vacuum dynamics. Okay. So I'm not going to spend too much time. I'm talking about the small parameter space left in the minimal supersymmetric standard model. You can just, look at our paper. It's not to say that we should not work and for example, look at, continue looking at those models, but we wanted to have tried a different way. So the idea, the new insight is that baryogenesis is often thought to happen after the period of inflation. And intuition tells you that, you know, things that are produced during inflation, matter, radiation, gets exponentially suppressed or diluted away. So why should you expect anything you produce during inflation would survive? But we're now going to show that this can actually, you can get the baryogenesis in a very natural economic way during inflation, and actually quite generic. So I'm just going to spell out the mechanism. By the way, of course, you know, please feel welcome, free, encouraged to stop me at any point for questions or statements. So the point here is that the common thread is this: is inflation happening. So what inflation is going to do for us is naturally the quantum perturbations that produced during inflation, the gravitational waves, are going to be produced in a very interesting way. So the correct word is something called circular dichroism, or some people call it birefringence. So there's going to be, rather than producing gravitational waves of equal handedness, what we'll find when you go through the equations, you will produce an abundance of one handedness over the other. But while that happens, you see, the phase of the inflaton field is now captured in the gravitational wave production. Through a quantum process, that phase is transferred to lepton production. And that's important because that actually maintains, so it competes with inflation's tendency to actually dilute the lepton production. But since inflation is exponential expansion, that production is happening out of equilibrium. So all three Sakharov conditions, what we'll see, happens just naturally. So, so this is just, you know, our nice picture of here we are today, our backward light cone, and how inflation works. This is, you know, everyone knows this. Well, you should know this by now. And that's just another thing. So, okay, now let's get into some details. Hopefully I have time to talk about everything here. So the point is that when we look at because we have a global U1 current in the standard model, the tree level standard model, what you find is that this is conserved, the leptonic currents are conserved. But now when we look at the expectation value up to the second order in the coupling, we get the quantum expectation value of this lepton current, and we all know the famous, this is nothing more than the triangle diagram where I have fermions going around a triangle, and in this case, I'm going to actually have graviton going around. So this is, you know, this evaluation is in Weinberg's second volume. Point is that the standard model actually does have an anomaly from the gravitational sector, provided that you have more left-handed, an imbalance of the number of left-handed and right-handed leptonic species. This will not vanish. That leads basically to a sourcing of the lepton number by this term. So you would say, of course, this thing is highly suppressed. So the, you know, this term has a 1 over m Planck squared suppression. But we'll get back to that. And so in the cosmology community, the first place we actually saw this type of term was when Mark Kaminkowski and Arthur Liu and Wang, I believe, I could be wrong, they tried to think of a cool way to test for parity violation in the CMB, and they just, in a sense, pulled this term out of a hat. Mark told me this, by the way, because, and, you know, they tried to look at those effects. So this term is a parity-violating effect in general relativity, and it's purely topological at this stage. All right? So if, to the point here is that, imagine we look at the time-like component and the time variation of this lepton current, we will find that we can, there's a potential that if this term was non-vanishing somehow, that we can actually produce over some period of time a net lepton number. You are absolutely correct, but I'm looking at just only left-handed species. So that's why if it was a gamma 5 there, it would be left minus right. So this is, again, in real cosmology, we actually have to look not only at our Friedman-Robertson-Walker metric, but perturbations. So we look at our gauge invariant perturbations, and the point is the opportunity to produce this non-vanishing RR dual will actually be due to the presence of perturbations that happen during inflation. So this term just vanishes in FRW background if there were no perturbations, but we are told to, when we do structure formation, to look at the perturbations. And if I just take, let's ignore the vector and scalar perturbations, I mean, they don't contribute to this RR dual anyway. So that was done by, you know, we went through that as well, thanks to Michael. but if you now plug this in into RR dual, you actually get this expression. And the same thing if you interchange left and right. Okay. And if I actually now look at the perturbine sign equations, right, the R part will just give me box H roughly. And this will actually end up as a source. So if I write everything together and I collect terms nicely, I end up with box H left and box H right. Okay. Can be sourced in equal and opposite ways in the presence of RR dual. And that is the root of how this RR dual will potentially source this this lepton current. So the point is, I'm going to produce gravity waves during inflation. Well, I didn't tell you. This is the phase of the inflaton field. Okay. And what I didn't tell you, because I'm running out of time, I fear to run out of time, I'm going to calculate this diagram here. I'm going to take H left, H right, take the Green's function of H left and H right, okay, build the RR dual out of that as a local operator, so I'm right. This will be sourced during inflation, and then I'm going to compute this J, the expectation value of J. It's deciduous, no, it's inflation.
Yes. No, what I'm saying what happened to the dry sub vacuum for you?
It's a bunch of Davies vacuum.
So you put a bunch of Davies vacuum?
Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah. So there was, because of the time constraint, the term, what I'm really looking at is something that looks like R plus phi R wedge R. Right. And this will become the inflaton field. So I have d mu phi. And so that's basically in the decidor background. Yeah, so this, in general, is a, so I have a complex scalar field with a real part, psi e to the I phi. And this is this phi here. It's a pseudo-scalar. So it's like natural inflation. Okay. So the point is, let me just back up. So I run inflation through, and inflation is sourced by this pseudo-scalar field. And now when I perturb this situation, and I actually look at the equations of motion, I get this equation of motion. Right here, these two. Okay, that's... And this is the Dahlen-Bergschen and the de Sitter background. So now what we do, and this theta is phi dot, right? So it's sourced by the rolling so it's related to the slow roll parameter. So it's roughly a constant. So I'm going to get a constant production of H, of these left, imbalance of H left and H right. But here's what's cool. When we solve, we will be able to find exact solution of this situation. Okay, so we'll get exact solutions for the gravity waves. And they'll be different than what you normally expect for gravity waves during, you know, ordinary inflation that's not coupled to this R which R term.
Sorry. You're expanding around an F without the background, right? But you said that your Dahlen-Bergschen is the sitter.
Well, it's the sitter in the FRW... You know,
because to my experience,
it's FRW with the scale factor is exponential.
Yeah, but there may be some problems in the sense that the sitter is sometimes a really much simpler situation than FRW in the sense that you may not encounter ghosts or instabilities.
Yeah, I mean, this will work with power law inflation too. We just did this because the calculations are more amenable. All right, so just to specify, so we have this F of, now we're going to parameterize this coupling of some scalar field to keep it general as some F of theta, this theta is just related to phi by this definition here, okay, times this operator, okay. So that's, we're going to have that term, and we'll see where that term actually comes from in the context of string theory in a second, okay, but... I'm just, you know, we're just trying to think about barrier genesis. I see Radu smiling already. He knows where it comes from. Now you know I was bothering all the time. Which one? Which one? Right here? I mean, so I have phi over M Planck, and this is a dimension 4 operator. I see your point, though. So the point is, here's my system of equations now. So I have the propagation of the gravity wave left and right, sourced by this phi, and this is we're just like collecting terms here. F is derivative with respect to phi. All right, so if we have a linear term, only this survives for now. But this just shows that it can be more interesting if you have, you know, more complicated situations. And we are left to basically solve in conformal time this equation. So F was just some function of phi. Yeah, but for all purposes now, our F is just going to be, it's just going to be linear. It's going to be phi over M Planck, for example, or some scale. And we're going to try to solve. So, you know, this is nothing more than what we normally solve for gravity waves without this theta source. Okay? So this will give us, like, Bessel functions. But now with this term here, we have to, we're going to seek to find H. Once we find H, we find the Green function. Okay? So that's the strategy. So the gravity waves are propagating in, you know, in this background. And this R wedge R term is, in a sense, sourcing. Okay, so the first thing we find the this homogeneous solution, and then we use it as an ansatz. So here's the ansatz for some unknown G of eta, and then we can plug it back in. And after some some fun algebra, we can just take, remember we had the expression for R wedge R in terms of H. So once we found H, we can get the Green's function. So we go through that procedure, get the Green's function, and then we can build this operator, about the Bunch-Davies vacuum. And what we find is that this R wedge R, which is nothing more than the rate of change of the lepton number, okay, is this term here, this thing. So notice that the lepton number depends on the gravity wave power spectrum amplitude. So that was intriguing. It also, you know, it also depends on the cutoff, which some people are not happy about. It's you have to impose a UV cutoff, which we will actually constrain. And it depends on the CP violating term. Meaning the phase of the slow roll parameter. So this is a baryogenesis, a leptogenesis mechanism, okay, that is in some sense, once you're given inflation, and if inflation is coming from complex fields like this, just in terms of inflationary parameters, actually give you, has a potential of giving you the lepton number. Well, let's actually see what range of parameters constrained by data can give us 10 to the minus 10. So if you just do that integral and you integrate in conformal time, remember time runs backwards in conformal coordinates, we integrate from the beginning to the end of inflation, and we plug in this this term, this quantum the gravitons are scattering, and as they scatter, they produce leptons. So this integral represents a compromise, actually, what we should expect between the effects of two effects of inflation. The first is the blow-up distances, and carries the physical momenta, and the second is to dilute the generated lepton number through expansion. So if you actually now just do the integral, what you find is that the lepton to entropy ratio at the end of inflation, and here we're making an assumption of spontaneous reheating. So we just we use the Stefan Boltzmann law in terms of the entropy's T cubed and plug that into the Friedmann equation. And then we're able to get the entropy density. And what we find is that the baryon-to-entropy ratio produced in inflation in this way, through this anomalous term, is 10 to the minus 10, provided that Hubble over M Planck is in this range. Simultaneously, so I have basically a two-parameter fit, basically, or constraint. And it's well within, okay, this is really low-scale inflation. But, you know, for example, for high-scale inflation and gut scale cutoff, where the gravity waves are, you know, propagating at gut scale, I will get the correct baryon-to-entropy ratio. But there's, of course, some fine-tuning, and that comes from where this term comes from. That is related to where does this term come from? Why was I even motivated to plug it in, to put it in this action? Well, the truth of it was just intuition. And then we kind of went backwards, and Jim Gates actually said, you know, actually, you guys didn't know where this thing comes from? Go talk to Murat. And anyway, what am I? So one could ask the question, okay, that's nice. That's a sort of nice result. And so what? There are many mechanisms for bioregenesis. What makes yours so special? So we can ask, well, you know, if this term does exist, if this field is still around, Roland, for example, maybe some type of quintessence, part of a quintessence, I know people have spoken about axionic. Have people actually done any kind of axionic quintessence?
Yeah.
Okay, so if this was something like that, we can ask whether or not such a term is actually constrained. This is where Nico and I came in, and Nico taught me a lot about parameterized post-Newtonian approximation, and we had many nights at the bar, you know, drinking water. So if we ask today, how do we constrain this term? Because obviously we can't travel back in time and undergo inflation and, you know, put a... Anyway, let's not think about that. It turns out that if you go and do a PPN analysis of this term, we will actually get a new PPN parameter. I'll tell you all about that in a quick second. And feel free to bother Nico about this after my talk, because I want to move on to the gravity roots. But the important point here is that it's to define this thing called the Cotton tensor, which will basically, in a sense, change the energy momentum tensor by an additive amount, and from there you can actually go ahead and do PPN analysis. So by using this identity, we could compute. And so here's a quick blasting overview of PPN, and I want to thank Nico for helping me make up this slide. So the point is that you want to basically look at the propagation of a gravity wave, okay, in this limit. Okay, so we're basically looking at in a test particle limit, and this is, of course, in the solar system. And the idea is to take your alternative theory and solve the equation of motion with this modified T mu nu. Assume a perfect fluid, so for example, your sources could be a binary, the Earth, Sun, etc. Assume slow motion. And in this case, we will perturb the linearized Einstein equation up to V to the fourth, velocity to the fourth, and there'll be also vectorial parts and tensorial parts. And then you'll basically find a Green's function, basically. Okay, so, in, for example, the Newtonian potential will just be recovered from just having information about the source itself. And construct a super-duper-duper metric and parameterize this metric in terms of these PPM parameters, and go out and look at, you know, relativistic tests and binary systems and Mercury and yes, it does. Yes, very good point. That's referees bothered us in that. So, in this case, this new term, basically modifies this Cotton tensor, which is proportional to the energy momentum tensor, and there'll be a non-vanishing zero I component, and this is our new PPN parameter. And this is very similar to the curl. Basically, if I have a Keplerian orbit, okay, and I have a precession about this Keplerian orbit, this is what this term is contributing to. So it's a gyroscopic frame dragging effect. And since, you know, we stumbled on this term, Nico was nice enough to contact his advisor, former advisor Cliff Will, and we established that it's a new PPM parameter, it was not constrained. And then soon after, our friends at Caltech followed up with a nice way of discussing that. The point is that you can then compute basically that this leads to the curl of this vectorial component, and it gives you this frame dragging of gyroscopes. Okay, there's a very weak constraint on now this coupling of the Chern-Simons term to the Chern-Simons term, that that this f dot in terms of it has a time scale is less than or equal to 10 to the minus 2 seconds. I'm going to skip this because I want to move on to magnetic. So the lesson here is that just with the presence of this anomalous term in general relativity and inflation, we just went through just minimally. I could get leptogenesis. Let me also add that right around that time, actually, Hitoshi Murayama, Paul Steinhardt, and I forget the other person's name. I'm sad to say. Yeah, yes. Wrote a paper called Gravitational Leptogenesis or something like that. Gravitational Baryogenesis. And it's actually very similar in spirit to what we did. And in fact, it actually might be much closer because it turns out there's a way to transform your term into this term here. And that might actually lead to even further amplification of the effect. So I'm going to move on now to talk a little bit about, very quickly, how to think about where this term could come from in string theory. And the starting point here would be thinking about heterotic M theory. So the idea here is that you have an 11-dimensional supergravity theory, and the 11th dimension is on an interval, and there are two, in a sense, boundary domain walls, okay, that live in 10 dimensions. And that could be, and then I can imagine compactifying that situation down to 4 dimensions. So I have 6 dimensions wrapped around like some like a Clavial or Kähler manifold. And I have this 4-dimensional world, and the effective theory, the effective 4-dimensional theory, would actually give me this term, this phi R wedge R term. And that is that term is nothing more than the Green-Schwarz anomaly canceling term. That's one way to think about it. And it's actually necessary for the the cancellation of anomalies in string theory. So actually that term survives in generically in 4-dimensional compactifications. So it just should be there. Okay. So that's one way of thinking about it. And just to go back, the same way point particles, 0-dimensional particles, coupled to a 1-form like the vector potential, we can have like a 4-form that couples to brains, for example. All right. So where am I going with this? I'm going now into the gauge part of the anomaly. Okay. So on our 4-dimensional world, for example, space-time, we can actually have natural couplings of a 4-form and this 0-form, which is nothing more than the axion field. So I've made use of the gravitational part of the anomaly, and now I'm going to talk about what role could this gauge anomaly have after inflation ends. It's just there, so let's make use of it. So let's go back and sort of recapture things. So I first talked about this gravitational anomaly. And now, I'm trying to make things more amenable to string theory. And it turns out that there's quite a natural way to get this axionic inflation during string theory. And my colleagues at Stanford, Renata Kalash and Keshav, actually worked on this. Or some people call it, if you have many axions, they call it N-inflation. And the idea is that in that context, now I'm actually providing a home for this sort of like, you know, this little model I had, this little phenomenological model. And that gives us matter asymmetry. But now what I'm saying is that inflation could end, well, should end, and something happens with the symmetry breaks. A global symmetry breaks when inflation ends, and I'm going to have a heterotic cosmic string formation. In other words, there's going to be an axionic string that's formed here. Now the gauge anomaly couples to this string, and now we're going to follow the consequences of that. So that's hopefully I have time to talk about that. Do I have time to talk about it? How much? Okay. So now I'm going to quickly move us into chapter 2. This is only a 2-chapter book. Which is that the galactic magnetic field mystery. So most galaxies like our Milky Way are permeated by a magnetic field on the order of a few microgauss. So basically 50,000 times less than the magnetic field here on Earth. And clusters, the interesting thing is when you start looking at clusters, they are also observed to have roughly the same magnitude. And the idea is once you start with this, you know, this microgauss magnetic field, a nonlinear dynamo mechanism will just amplify. So I can basically, through the Faraday effect, the rotational motion will get converted into producing stronger magnetic fields and can maintain itself. But you still need, if you look at those equations, you still need a seed, and the lower bound at last scattering is 10 to the minus 22, roughly 10 to the minus 22 gauss. So here's a picture of the basically magnetic field patterns as a galaxy, a typical spiral galaxy, rotates. And notice that these fields, magnetic field lines, basically wrap around like this and this way. And here's in the optical, the M51 spiral galaxy. And notice that the B field, magnetic field, traces to these contours. These lines are basically the polarization vector of the magnetic field. And if these are basically optical contours. So anyone who's tried to actually come up with a mechanism for generating primordial magnetic fields in inflation, after a period of inflation, will find quite a challenge in doing that. And the problem is the coherency. It has to do with the fact that these magnetic fields have to be coherent on the scale of, say, a cluster of galaxies. So we just saw that the gravitational chiral anomaly contributes to the Standard Model to generate this lepton asymmetry during inflation. And as I said, it's necessary for the consistency of string theory. So now we're going to show how a similar anomaly just plays a role in the generation of the magnetic field. So that's kind of... And the idea here is that if we go back to this paradigm of D-brain-driven inflation, that if I take a brain and an anti-brain, and, you know, this game has been played in many different types of models, but the moral of the story is pretty much the same, that the open strings that stretch between his brains, in a sense, generate an effective potential that causes inflation on the four-dimensional world. And when these brains annihilate, inflation terminates. And in doing so, you can get a potential with a natural graceful exit in the sense that you get a tachyon condensation. So, I mean, this is just the reason why this is useful is that it gives us the field theory. The field theory lives on the brain, and that field theory, I'll show you what the effective field theory is. So the idea is that you have this collision, and then our friends here show that generically, if such an inflationary mechanism does happen, you will generically produce solar tonic cosmic strings. Okay. At the end of inflation. And the reason why is because, you remember cosmic strings, we'll talk about form, when a U1 symmetry is broken, and that U1 symmetry is actually associated with the U1 symmetry associated with the open strings. So a cosmic string quickie, if I have a Mexican hat potential, actually, I had a picture of Robert up here, and I decided to take it off. But it's an old, like a really old picture. Not old, like, you know, when he was, like, in the 80s. In a bathing suit. He used to like to go swimming when he was at Santa Barbara, so. So the idea here is that if I have a symmetry breaking potential, the surface of minimum energy or the vacuum manifold, if it's S1, or in this case U1, that my potential, I can actually have gradient energy pointing out, I can actually have a field configuration with gradient energy pointing out radially here, that would also break this U1 symmetry. And that is nothing more than this field configuration. And it's something that is localized, the cylindrical coordinate in the Z direction, has some radial fall off, and has a non-vanishing winding as I go around. And this solution is exactly, is no different. That's what you actually will get. So going back to 1985, these types of field theoretic cosmic strings were considered by Witten. And he argued that, you know, a really obvious question that actually I remember asking, it wasn't you, but Andrew Sornborg. I was so stupid back then. Not then. Less stupid now, but I said, well, this string theory thing people are doing, any sense that, you know, it's like I can think of it as a real string in a four-dimensional world. And this is exactly what Witten tried to show, was that a solitonic string is nothing more than a fundamental heterotic string in 10 dimensions, and he argued that the axionic string, this axion field, can be thought of as this heterotic string. But then, when he went through the math, he found that the tension of this string was far too large to meet the observational bounds, which today is less than equal to. This is the G mu, which is related to this is the tension of the string. And it's roughly now, well, this is a bound, but when Witten actually calculated the appearance of this heterotic, this you know, real string in four dimensions, it was ruled out. Well, yes, this stronger bound comes from gravitational lensing. So, this problem was revisited by the Becker sisters and Krauss, and they found that actually you can actually overcome the Witten's bound and construct, you know, a nice heterotic cosmic string. If you now attach, that's why I had that picture, actually, in four dimensions, those boundary walls become a fibrain. And that fibrain has a tension, and that tension reduces the overall tension of the string. All right, so I don't want to, we can bother Radu about that construction after the talk. But, so the strings are realized as axionic cosmic strings. So now, Here's a surprise. We're going to show now that these couplings actually are enough in this context of brain inflation and the string production to actually seed the galactic magnetic fields. And this was a mechanism, in a sense, that Brandenburger and Zhang sort of intuited a while ago. And the idea is that, according to Polchinski and his collaborators, during this period of, after this brain-driven inflationary type of mechanism, I'm going to generically produce a network, a scale-free network of cosmic strings. And these strings are going to be coherent over the scale of the horizon. And it's precisely that coherency that will allow these magnetic fields to be coherently produced. So these are some nice pictures I stole from the Cambridge website. And here's the effective four-dimensional theory. So we're going to have our fermionic fields, and they're going to be important. In this case, these are going to be charged particles, like quarks. You can think of charged quarks. Now, the nice thing about the heterodic construction is that you have charged quarks living in these, living on these brains. And I'm going to have a coupling between the axion and these quarks. I'm going to have this potential here. And, of course, in this case, I'm just focusing on the electromagnetic sector. And in the gauge sector, what we find is that you're going to have a coupling of this axion, just this particular anomalous term, to this FF dual term. And we're going to have also this term here as well. So we're going to have... this is nothing more than the, you know, epsilon tensor times the field strength tensor. So if you go and you solve the equations of motion, So inflation ends, I produce a network of strings. Now I'm looking at how these strings couple to electromagnetism. And the idea is that these strings actually are carrying charged particles in their core. Now you've seen this before. The pion couples from chiral symmetry breaking to FF dual, so an electromagnetic anomaly. And so when a pion decays into two photons, right, what's really going on? You have a pion is made of an up quark and an anti-down quark, and they both carry electric charge. But these strings, what's going to happen is they're going to be aligned in a particular way, okay, such that there's going to be a net flow of current that will basically generate magnetic fields. So the main point is that these charged quarks that live on this axionic string will induce a magnetic field that circulates the string. And from the Kibble mechanism, the string network and magnetic field will naturally scale with the Hubble radius. And that's exactly what we want. We want this coherence. So do we get that? So let's just go through the exercise. Basically, we're going to solve a modified electrodynamics. So now it's going to be sourced by this axionic term. We're going to use the axionic string as, you know, the string as a background, because these strings are formed at the end of inflation. So that's the string solution. We plug it in here, and the idea is that the string now, as it carries this current through, okay, there's also the ABJ anomaly equation that relates the flow of the fermions along the string. We're going to get a magnetic field that falls off as the radius and the scale of the horizon. And so we also have to make use of this equation that the fermion current is sourced by this term. So when you put it all together, the idea, the basic physical idea is that the string interacts with the photons in the quarks. The quark has a supercurrent that basically maintains the stability of the string. So that acts to stabilize the string, but in doing so, it generates a magnetic field. And you can actually find that solution. You go through the equations of motion, and you find that the solution that the magnetic field scales as R times the number density of the charge carriers on the string. Sorry, dies off as 1 over R, but enhanced by this amount. And the string network scales, basically, as some power law. In the scale-free case, it just scales with T. So if I just go through and say, let the magnetic field be coherent on the scale of the correlation length, meaning that will just be the Hubble radius, and let the critical temperature associated with the string formation be a GeV, just for fun. and we'll use like the down quark temperature, and then we just plug it into this magnetic field expression to get a number well within the range of necessary amount of magnetic field, seed magnetic field. So this paper is still work in progress. So in the case of the heterotic cosmic string, these strings are going to be stable. They're not going to decay. And the phase transition temperature can be larger, so we can actually get a larger magnetic field as a result. Okay, so let me. So I'm gonna. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
So what is different about what you've done?
Yeah, it's precisely because of this coupling of the string now to this anomalous term, and the fact that the core of these strings are carrying electric charge, or they're carrying quarks. So those cosmic strings were empty cosmic strings. These cosmic strings. Now, I think, so this is the only cosmic string model that makes use of this anomalous term. That's definitely true. And I think, yeah, so. Do you remember if you use this anomalous term? Well, good. We remember to cite you now. No, because this is motivated in a sense, right? We need this anomaly cancellation in terms of. No, it seems that, yeah.
So why is that changed?
These strings are stable. Yes. Say that. So in this case, yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Good. Yes. Right. Okay, good. So in this case, in the case of the cosmic strings that are motivated from the string theory, these are PQ strings normally, and so when they intercommute, they create more. So you don't have these, the breaking of strings through intercommutation as one mode of instability, and also in this case, that's what I meant when I said these strings are stable. Yeah, when they intercommute, they don't. They just create another string. Yeah. But, that's something that we could something to think about. Because, you know, we're still writing this paper up, so. But this was, for me, an exercise, I mean, to say, starting with this common thread, which is that I have these anomalous terms. And as I said, this was just one vehicle to sort of, you know, embed it in some theory. And it happens that string theory has this. But in general, I mean, you could just say, let's start with this term and just run the machine, run the cosmology. Is there a way to actually test this gauge anomaly term? And this is some work that we're finishing up with my graduate student, Joey Ochoa, who's right there. And the idea is that this Chern-Simons term actually generically produced circularly polarized gravity waves, something that people thought was just near impossible to produce. When I say people, I mean observational and theoretical cosmologists, at least the ones that I've spoken to, the V polarization. So remember, I'm running out of time, so let me just say a few things real quickly. Why should we expect this? So if we go through the machinery of just doing the Boltzmann equations of the photon baryon fluid, now with this term as a collision term, and you just grind through, then what you find is that the linear polarization that is just produced from the quadrupole anisotropies from the CMB photons are just going to be sourced back into a circular polarization. So you'll get a V polarization. Now, the name of the game now is to actually find a power spectrum for this, exactly what type of power correlation this would give, whether it would give pure B or EB. That still needs to be done, but the point is that we can actually have polarization, circular polarization source from this term. So no one has actually looked in the CMB for circular polarization. It's actually used it's basically used as a way of calibrating for noise, okay, for background noise. So right now, our friends for the polar bear experiment are, the idea here was to come up with a counterexample and a particular type of, you know, theoretical sort of, so that's really what's motivating this, really, is to come up with some theoretical underpinning or mechanism to ask our friends to calibrate the instrument to look for V. And that's kind of, so basically, we have the, you know, typical first-order Compton scattering within the presence of this, you can think of this as this background Chern-Simons field. Think of it as the axionic, the time-like component of it. Here it is. We scatter our photon. It modifies the vacuum. But then we have the second-order effect, where two photons come in and exchange, and the background is a T. And this actually converts this linear polarization into a circular polarization. So me and my friends and colleagues will be putting a paper out really soon. We have some drafts if anyone want to take a look at it while you're here. We can make nice paper airplanes out of it. So I'm just going to end with that. Oh, he said Pitt. So just in the year 2367, the USS Enterprise D was nearly destroyed after an encounter with a cosmic string fragment approximately 177 kilometers in length. The ship inadvertently became trapped by a group of two-dimensional life forms who lived in a string and were attempted to return home. In order to escape, the Enterprise used its parabolic dish to simulate the vibrations of the string long enough to confuse the life forms and disrupt their hold on the Enterprise. After the Enterprise was freed, the life form continued on course to the string. Hey, I'm trying to. I think data needs to go. I need to replay. I want to leave physics and go into Star Trek. I just want to back up and say that this is, you know, very much a toy model, and you know, I just want to say that we can think of this baryon asymmetry and the cosmic, the primordial magnetic field as sort of dovetails how we can think of particle physics more naturally being married with the dynamics, cosmological dynamics. And in this exercise, there's a potential, we can start thinking about potential for new observations. In this case, circular polarization, and so some of my friends here who we're talking with. Not the baryogenesis, but the magnetic field thing is dead, I would say, because, that's a good point. Yeah, so it's a bona fide, you know, prediction in this. And it would be nice to see, so this was all applied to inflation, but this term is just there in the effective four energy action of heterotic string. And so that falls very nicely into the lap of the people that did the ekpyrotic scenario. And so it would be nice to carry it through that machinery and see, you know, if these types of predictions or explanations persist. So that's a nice, I think, project for a graduate student. And, you know, we can ask questions about the effects of these anomalies on Lenzin, on weak Lenzin. And, well, I guess Katie already talked about how the axion contributes to dark matter. And that's it. Sorry to take you over time. Yeah, that was based on the original paper with me, Michael, and Shaheen. Yeah. So, yeah, it was. They basically, after we wrote our paper, they didn't find. They just basically said that in words. They didn't like go through the Boltzmann equation or anything like that. And it's, as you said, so the gravitational wave spectrum. Yeah, that's right. Do I use gravitational waves? Where? Where? Oh, no. So. Oh, I said gravitational wave. No, so it does. So it does produce circular gravitational waves and photon. I mean, it does both. The second one. That's right. Yeah. In fact, what I showed you earlier on, that H left, H right, that if you write that actually in the helical basis, you will get an elliptically polarized gravitational wave. So take our solutions, and that's exactly what they use in that paper. Yes. Good. In fact, yeah, that's good. That's a good point that you brought that up. So in this case, we make use of that through leptogenesis by converting delta, you know, delta L to B minus. Through the B plus L to delta B. So we actually need the electric weak spiral lines there, right? Yeah. It's in your review notes, yes. I'm sorry. Okay.
So this was Katie's question she was asking about, right? About they don't find the circuit. Circuit of Coriolis, that what would be falsified. You said that it's a magnetic field mechanism that would be falsified, but not the battery changes. So I'm trying to understand the Coriolis picture here.
Yes, yes. Yeah, the Coriolis picture, yes.
Someone I suppose, what is the relation between are these kind of loosely connected, three separate parts, or is there really...
Yeah. Yes, so... I mean, Radu could say more about this, I'm going to keep trying to get him in trouble. So in the Green-Schwarz, so basically we have this string theory with this anomaly canceling term in one particular realization. We'll talk about the Hedderada case. So we have this an anomaly canceling term that's added to the, now the thing about four dimensions. And what we'll actually get is a generically a phi R wedge R plus a phi F wedge F. Term. Okay. So we get both of these terms, and the idea here is that one term is activated during inflation, which is the gravitational part, and then after inflation, that phi becomes a cosmic string, because a symmetry, a U1 symmetry is broken. That's using this argument that inflation ends because that symmetry breaks. And then now that, because these string configurations are formed, you're going to produce the F wedge F term becomes dominant. Because I'm talking about the four dimensional in both cases. So just to write down some equations. So it's just, yeah. So in the four dimensional situation, I'll just have a phi R wedge R plus F wedge F. And what happens is that during inflation, the U1 symmetry, this field actually, you know, there's a U1 symmetry associated with this phi, and it's not broken yet. I mean, it's rolling down some potential like this, and at the bottom of the potential, when inflation ends, this U1 symmetry is broken. So here's phi, it's rolling, then, and during that course, this phi dot, which corresponds to the slow roll of this, will generate and source this R wedge R. Inflation is going on. Inflation ends when it gets to the bottom. The symmetry is broken precisely because phi becomes cosmic string solutions. All right, so I get a cosmic string solution, F of rho, e to the in theta. So the strings wrap around the vacuum manifold, and I have, and that, now that phi dot now is zero, phi is non-zero, and then when I go and I solve the equations of motion, yes? Yeah. Making use of the fact that the quarks, the mu j, is also sourced by this F wedge F, and this sources the F wedge F, I can actually show that there is a zero mode of the quarks moving along the string, and I get a magnetic field at the end of inflation. In this case, yeah, but, you know, another game I could have played in is to say that actually there's generically more than one axion. There's lots of axions in generic string. So I can have different axions and couplings to both terms separately. So that's why I answered the question that way. But it's a... So this is the most minimal... The minimal thing I can do, but then I can have a couple of axions couple in separately.
Or the second axion and the second thing. What is special about the first axion, which will actually give you the battery genesis, all right? But during inflation.
Yeah, because.
But not the magnetic field. So.
Yeah. So in one case the axion is realized as a string configuration, a nonlinear string configuration or network. In the other case, it's just some field that's correlated over the horizon, some constant field, like a good old inflaton field.
But if you have a string theory or something, then you know that dynamically something happens. So how can it be that
Well, in the context of this brain inflation, what happens is when the brains actually collide, the U1 symmetry, there's a U1 symmetry on the theory of the brain that gets broken. Or in fact, it's a U1 cross U1 that gets broken to a diagonal U1. And so, in that context, the pi 1 would be non-vanishing, and that corresponds to the charge of the string. No, I haven't, but, I should, because Tan Mei knows what he's talking about, so. Years ago I heard those talks, and I honestly forget, Mark might know something, you guys know this stuff too, so. Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
So just to follow up to that, the mechanism of the movement applied to these, the ones which you discussed, those are different?
So to be honest with you, this was actually the first string cosmology project I've done in a while, but I got very excited about it. So I need to now go back and relearn a lot of this stuff. So get reacquainted with the literature. I think Irina had a question. Right. Yes, so it is different in the sense. Yeah, that was good. So that comes from exactly what. My head is not working. So the idea was actually after we did this leptogenesis thing, said, is there a way to, since this is happening with gravitational waves, is there a way to actually look for this? And so we went into the late universe situation with the stuff with Nico and Jakiv and this body of work to say, can we constrain it today? You will, because of this the left and right asymmetry in the gravity wave due to inflation, generically those gravitational waves will be circularly polarized. So it will be distinguished from typically what you would see should you see gravity waves in inflation. So that's probably the best we can do. So you get circularly polarized gravity waves. I guess I have to run it through the mill of Richard's code, because it's going to be a combination. Good. So this, the number depends on two things. Well, actually, morally speaking, three things, which is the cutoff scale. And so people get really upset at me when they see UV cutoff scales because they don't want to trust that, the cutoff. Modulate that issue. If you give me that, the number depends on the slow roll parameter of the inflaton field, which I would have to reconstruct the potential to do the dance there. And then the other thing it will depend on is the gravitational wave power spectrum. But it will be the gravitational wave power spectrum for a circularly polarized gravitational wave. So that's all it depends on. So I would just have to run it through your code, I guess, and see if it's already ruled out. By the way, are those cosine potentials ruled out? Yeah. Well, that might be useful because.
So F has to be greater than 0.6 F and then I have to
This is the, there's an F down here. So that's what you're talking about. Okay, we could. So I don't know if that, so the answer is no, we can't prove, but it's a slight, we think of it as a slight improvement on what's been typically done during leptogenesis, because you have a huge parameter space to play with and lots of degeneracies there. We only have three things here, and the tough thing actually is to really get a hold of the, you know, this cutoff dependence in the answer. So that's a real problem. That's why we'd like to do something more non-perturbative, and why I was peeking around in loop quantum cosmology and seeing if something like this can come about.